I got something else to talk about a little bit about Mary today. And last week, if you were here, we talked a little bit about Joseph and how he chose what was right over what was lawful as it concerned Mary and her pregnancy. But I want to turn away from Joseph, because we talked about him, and talk about Mary. But the thing is that we know a little bit more about Mary than Joseph, but not much. She shows up a few more times in the gospel narrative, in the story of Jesus, but it's only small parts. And I think the same can be said about Mary as Joseph and other characters of the Bible, in the sense that we often paint pictures of what we think Mary should be like. We make assumptions in the artwork and in our mind of who Mary is and what her personality is and what she is like. But the truth is, all we have is what is written. That's it. We have the text. And so we have to look at the text to get an idea of what this Mary was like. And I find it fascinating that the story begins this way: in the sixth month. When I see things like that, it interests me. It's like the small detail pops out at me, and most of us would just kind of read over it and go, oh yeah, let's get to the heart of the story. But there's something to be said of, why would Luke write when this took place? And so I looked it up. I looked up and found out that the sixth month of the Jewish calendar, as it kind of correlates to our kind of American or Gregorian calendar, is the Jewish month of Elul. That is the month. And it is important because it usually falls between August and September. Their months don't quite line up with ours. And it is an important month because it is a month before the major high holidays of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. And so, like most people, what do you do before the holidays? You prepare. You get ready. And it is traditionally known that the month of Elul was a month of reflection, forgiveness, and mercy, because you are getting ready for the Day of Atonement, the Day of Forgiveness. And the best thing you could do as you're getting ready to atone for your sins is to be somewhat reflective of how you've lived your life in the last year. And also, as a new year comes, what do? We think about the year that is passing and looking forward to a new year. Well, that is what happened exactly within the Jewish community in the month of Elul. Matter of fact, the name itself is an acronym from a verse in the Song of Songs, or the Song of Solomon, which says, I am my beloved, and my beloved is mine. Now, Song of Solomon is actually a love poem or verse, but in this context, it was all about how we relate to God, that we are loved by God and that we love God as well. So she was doing the very thing, most likely, that most Jewish folks do a month before the high holy days. She was reflective and forgiving and showing mercy. And little did she know that in that sixth month, in her preparation for atonement, that she would be surprised by someone who would come to provide forgiveness and atonement 30 years down the road. So we know she's married. She's not living with her husband yet. And if you didn't hear last week's sermon, go online and hear it, because I'm not going to go through the whole marriage contract thing again. But if you're interested about Jewish marriage back in that time, you can listen to last week's sermon. So they were married, but they weren't living together yet. And that was common of that day. And it is in that time frame that an angel named Gabriel shows up and he appears to Mary. Now, here's the thing that we need to know. Angel visitations are not common. Okay? I know what happens. We start reading Bible stories and we start thinking to ourselves, oh yeah, an angel shows up to Mary. That seems like the most common or everyday normal thing to happen. Angel visitations are not common, not even in the Bible. Okay? It would be about as normal as an angel showing up here right now. And it might give us a thrill, but it would scare us to death. Now, let's add to that that this is an angel named Gabriel. He's no run-of-the-mill angel. He's not even a Christian creation, mind you. He is an angel of the Old Testament. He makes his first appearance where he is named in the book of Daniel, the prophet in exile, about 550 years before Mary. So it's been a while since Gabriel's been on the planet making himself known. And he is one of seven archangels. They are the top of the angel pecking order. God didn't send some common, ordinary, everyday angel down to Mary. He sent the biggest, baddest angel on the block. That's pretty cool, right? Archangels are known as warriors and protectors. I mean, tough stuff. It's like sending the general when a messenger would do. Matter of fact, his name in Hebrew is Gabriel. El is God, which means the power of God. That's what his name means. So it's not just an angel. God sends the big guns down. No messing around. God didn't send just a messenger. He sends his power and might to talk to Mary. Why? Because God's got big plans. Not just delivering a friendly little message. This is a strategic battle plan. And he has sent not just a soldier, but a general to execute this plan. And it's way more than a message, mind you. With Mary's cooperation, this will be a decisive action. Now, God and the angels have been busy, especially Gabriel over the past few months, because Gabriel also visited Zechariah a few months before, the husband of Elizabeth, to tell him that he was going to have a son named John who would grow up and be a Baptist. I was kind of hoping he'd grow up and be a Lutheran, but, you know, what can you do? Okay, maybe not that. Okay, never mind. So this is quite a major thing. We have two angel sightings within months, and we hadn't seen an angel for about 500 years. So this is a big deal. The other thing I'd point out to you is this was no dream like Joseph, right? He only merited a dream. He's not as important. I mean, as if to say, you know, Joseph, it'd be helpful if you got on board with this program, but if you don't, God's not going to be deterred. Mary, on the other hand, doesn't receive a dream. He shows up live and in person, which you can kind of see the importance level of the whole thing, dream versus in person. And the angel greets her. Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you. Now, if you go back and look at the Joseph story from last week, Joseph doesn't get a greeting. He's not highly favored. He's not even kind of favored. But Mary is. And I'll just tell you, if you're going to start a conversation with somebody, always begin with a kind word, especially if you want something, right? Or, on the other hand, be wary of the person who begins the conversation with, "Hey, buddy, how's it going?" You'd be like, "Yeah, okay, what do you want?" Okay? So she's on to this devious angel. She's totally on to the devious angel here because he's like being kinder. Because it says she was greatly troubled at these words, like, "What's going on?" And wondered what kind of greeting this made. What? So she's kind of on to him. And here's why. Because in the real world, flattery is the beginning of trouble. It's always the beginning of trouble. And if you doubt me, we can go to the book of Proverbs. Whoever flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his feet. So, of course, Mary would be suspicious, as we would if somebody came up to us and started buttering us up, and you're like, "Okay, what do you want?" I mean, our kids are great with that, right? When they start being really nice to us, we know they want something. We know how this works. So, from an earthly point of view, she senses a setup. She's skeptical, and rightfully so. I mean, She's no pushover. That should tell you something. She's like, what do you want? She immediately goes into the mode. We all know the mode. You put your hand on your chin, maybe one finger over your lips, and you go, right? Steve, I see you doing that already. That's good. That's good. Don't turn around. Just somebody's already doing that. They're already skeptical of my words, you see? And that's a good thing. I'd be skeptical of my words too. She thinks there might be ulterior motives, but this is an angel of the Lord and no earthly human person. Angels aren't known for lying because the very nature of angels surround the throne of God, and therefore they are holy and cannot lie, and if they did, they would not be angels, but demons. So Gabriel is telling the truth. She is highly favored by God, but why? I think this is what's interesting. Maybe Mary was liked by God just because he chose her. Well, I like her because I chose her. That's the end. But I think there's more in the story that gives us an idea of why she is highly favored. First, we go back to that six-month thing. It was mentioned in that account for a purpose. It doesn't say she was a great woman of faith, but clearly by the result of her action, she is a great woman of faith. And she was probably doing the thing that most faithful Jews were doing in that sixth month. She was reflecting on her life and her relationship with God. She was beginning most likely to take inventory of her life, the good and the bad, and preparing for the new year. You can see where God might like that. You can see where God might have affectionate feelings for someone who is taking their faith seriously. So that's one thing, but there is something else, too. And it's in the narrative. She is skeptical of the angel's words. I like that. I think God likes that. What kind of greeting is that? And then the angel goes on to tell her that she's going to get pregnant. She's going to give birth to a king from the line of David. He will be known as the Son of God. And this kingdom will have no end. In some circles down the road, she will be known as the Queen Mother. So first she is uncertain by the compliment, and then Gabriel bestows on her this news flash that she's going to be pregnant, and she responds. Yeah, that's all well and good, but you forgot something, Gabriel. It's a great plan and all, but the devil's in the details, Gabe. I'm a virgin. Second time that she's a little skeptical of what God is up to. Remember when I said we like to paint pictures of what we think certain Bible characters look like? Well, I think in a lot of ways we look at Mary as this demure, quiet, shrinking violet. The angel shows up. She's cowering in bed. I don't know what to do. I'll do whatever you tell me to do. Well, the story tells us something completely different. She's no pushover. She thinks to herself, why are you complimenting me? And then she says, why are you telling me I'm pregnant? I can't be pregnant. That's not medically possible. Mary is practical. She asks questions. She's not even afraid to speak up to an archangel. But what do? We read this story like it's the most natural thing in the world. Oh, yeah, she's talking to an angel. It's no big deal. Are you kidding me? If one of those little, like, chubby little cherubs showed up flying around here, I'd be scared. She's talking to an archangel who's, like, ready for battle. Mary is poking holes in God's master plan for salvation. I can see why God likes her. She's faithful, she has strength, and she's not afraid to speak up. This woman of faith has it going on. And I think sometimes we've misinterpreted Mary as being very passive. I mean, to me, this is more the picture of Mary that I see. Yeah, you want to mess with her in a dark alley. Yeah, that's a picture. I mean, I'd be questioning my sanity if I saw an angel and started talking to it, but she's like, yeah, wait a minute. She's not snarky. She doesn't have an attitude, but she's not afraid to speak up, which was in a culture where that was not acceptable at all, to question authority. So the angel tells her essentially, don't worry about the details, because with God, nothing is impossible. So what does she do? She steps up and doesn't hesitate. She doesn't make an excuse. She doesn't ask a million what-if questions. She's quite the opposite of Moses. Moses was trying to do whatever he could to get out of going back to Egypt 5 different times. Well, what if? And how about this? And I don't think so. And she's like, okay. Okay, I'm the Lord's servant. May it be to me as you have said. She's got more going on than Moses. Boom. Done. Great, great author, Madeleine L'Engle. If Mary had the courage to take the impossible into her body, can we not have the courage to take it into our hearts? I love that. Remember, this whole operation is fraught with danger. She could be stoned to death. This is scandalous. This could cost Mary everything. But she does it. And what's even better is this is the type of mother that God chose for Jesus. She had an influence on him. Think about that. She modeled for Jesus what faith looks like. She showed Jesus that it's good to speak up and not be a shrinking violet. I mean, there might be more than one reason God chose her. She also understands God's heart. Later on in her pregnancy, when she visits her relative Elizabeth, the one who is carrying John, who grew up to be a Baptist one day, she bursts into a song which absolutely describes God's heart when it comes to justice. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm, God. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but he's lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. Which totally reflects God's choice in Mary, a woman from Galilee, from the middle of nowhere, with no power, no authority, not much of anything. And he picks her. She gets that. See, God's heart lies with the nobodies of this world like us. Nobodies who trust God and are willing to speak up. Amen.